From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about what words technically mean. Even if, well, none of us use them that way anyway. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times best-selling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hi, Ross and Kathy. You know, from time to time, we get letters from people who are upset about the way we use particular words, and I have a theory about this. Do I, though? Do I have a theory about this? Someone's going to get mad at me if I say that I have a theory about
this. I'm so slow. I didn't think that.
Dead silence. And this is like Fletcher's segue into the show. And Kathy and I are like, huh? Yeah.
Do you?
Well, that may illustrate a point. That may illustrate a point, and we'll get to that.
It does. Yes, we are responding to an email we got from Matt. And I had to read it out loud because I just like saying the first line, which,
yes,
Ross, you are saying it wrong. Sorry. He said, you mentioned, if you have been listening, you'll remember this episode. He said, you mentioned that you saw hieroglyphics a lot when you lived in Egypt, but you should have said hieroglyphs. I recently did a 24-part Great Courses on Egypt and the Writing System, and the professor made a point that his students use the right term. Okay, so Ross and he went back and forth a little bit about this in emails.
I left. Yeah. No, I really love ancient Egypt. And I was, when we did the show, I was initially going to do exactly that and say the distinction between hieroglyphs and hieroglyphics, hieroglyphic being, you know, the adjective, etc. But as we were writing the outline for the show, I looked up the words on Merriam-Webster.
Can I jump in just really fast before you? Just because I want to defend you for a second. I remember this now, and I did point out to Matt that in the following episode, you actually did outline that distinction between hieroglyphs.
Yes. I was going to do the same thing, yes. Fletcher, okay. In defense of my brother.
But the key thing is that distinction is no longer in effect.
Right.
And in general use, it could be either hieroglyphs or hieroglyphics, referring to the ancient Egyptian writing, which has pictures in it, even though it's partially syllabic, etc. So I was very defensive, and also I mentioned, which is typical of Ross, well, actually, I knew a lot of archaeologists and Egyptologists. I did.
Oh, God.
And then I mentioned one incident, which I still think back on. I was a kid in Saqqara, which is the step pyramid, King Djoser's step pyramid. And Professor Lauer was doing a lot of digging there at the time. And there was an open tomb. And in those days in Egypt, you could just pick up stuff. No one, you know, did anything. So I hopped into the tomb and tried to hack off part of a mummy case head.
Oh my God.
And my father was walking around with him, and Lauer comes and sees me in the tomb. My father is like mortified, you know, my son, the tomb robber, get out of, you know, whatever. And Lauer just laughed and said, you have the makings of a true archaeologist.
You're a thief.
Yeah, but actually, he said hieroglyphique or hieroglyphique. It was French, so whatever. But anyway, that was the defense of the term. And we're good. That leads us into the whole talk. When specialists use a word and when non-specialists use a word, there are usually different distinctions. And people may accuse people of being wrong when in fact they're not wrong, or when in fact they are wrong. Okay?
Well, I'm sorry, I want to interject. I don't think that wrong is necessarily the right word here. I think that what it is in certain areas, there's a specificity where the specialist is using it, and lay people don't use it in the same way, but it's accepted as such for people.
But now I'm going to interject back on Kathy. But in some cases, though, people overgeneralize with a word, and they, in effect, the first one is specific with that. And they affect use it incorrectly in the sense that they take a generalist approach to a word that is very specific, if you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean.
Well, evolution is just a theory. We're going to get into that. I've heard that a lot. Mm-hmm. But when they say just a theory, they're acting as if, you know, well, here's a good guess, and right. it's not.
Right.
And in that sense, the scientific mode is correct, and it's better to be understood as such.
Okay, so let's start there with theory and hypothesis. Now, technically, and we're talking about in like scientific terms, I don't exactly know what the scientific definition of a hypothesis is. I mean, you know, you learn about the scientific method when you're in school, and your hypothesis about something is sort of your idea or your guess about what might happen if you do something. You know, if I drop this ball, it will fall to the ground. That's my hypothesis. Then I test it, and yes, of course it happens. But maybe it's not something that has necessarily been tested so many times that it is accepted by everybody.
Brilliant, Fletcher. A hypothesis can be refuted.
Yeah, okay.
You could basically say it doesn't, but when you drop the ball, it floats upwards.
Right.
I mean, you know, it can happen that you go, oh my gosh. And a theory is basically a hypothesis that's withstood a lot of tests.
Lots, like a lot. Like people agree on this.
Right.
We mentioned, you know, always the theory of evolution. And of course, that's something that scientists agree on. And, mm-hmm. and general lay people don't necessarily think of theory in the same way. You know, we think of theory as I brought it up at the beginning, which is like, oh, I have a theory about this, which is just like, I have this idea, and it could be a cockamamie idea, or it could be based
right.
in some reality. But theory, you know, doesn't necessarily mean it's been tested and people agree on it, just to general lay people.
Right.
And Ross, as you mentioned, this is a problem because people say things like, evolution is just a theory, but it's a completely different understanding of what that word theory means.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We have a quote. Actually, it was in one of our books, and I really love it. It's an astrophysicist was saying that the problem with the phrase just a theory is that it implies a real scientific theory is a small thing,
right.
and it is not.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's just beautifully put, you know, because mm-hmm. it minimizes it. It really does.
Is there a way to fix this, though? It doesn't really seem like it, because theory, the idea of, oh, I have a theory, like that's so ingrained and understood among the non-scientific community that it's really hard to distinguish between a scientific theory and just a theory off the top of your head, an idea off the top of your head, just for people mm-hmm. outside of the scientific community. Like it would be really hard to introduce another word in either arena, right? I mean, in science, you know what a theory is, and it's been tested, and that's a really important thing. Mm-hmm. And in non-science, you know what a theory is. It's this weird idea that you have, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it would be really hard to introduce a new word in either place to take the place of the word theory. I don't know if there's a solution for this misunderstanding.
I don't think there is, actually.
No, and I don't even really know. Given the idea of theory, it comes from Latin theoria, which is from Greek theoria, which is looking at, a viewing. And so, the early origins of the word theater, actually the same sort of idea. You're looking at something and, hey, there's an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really become strict in terms of scientific stuff until science becomes strict. And we still look at it as basically, I'm looking at an idea. Hey, here's an idea I just have. Mm-hmm. And I think we're stuck with that at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I think the key problem that we really have to beware of, I think we can say correctly in life, oh, I have a theory that, egg salad is
yeah.
better for you than, and then just, we're not testing it. We're just saying it in idle conversation. I think we can do that. I think the danger we have to be aware of is when we talk about scientific theory, when then we have to go, we're in a new, you know, level of talk of speech, and there we have to be specific.
We go back to register, which we've always
yes.
talked about. Yeah. I mean, I would argue the same thing with hypothesis. I mean, I think a lot of people use hypothesis like theory in regular life.
You oh, yeah.
know, like, I've got mm-hmm. this hypothesis, blah, blah, blah. And I don't have a problem with that. But yeah, I don't think that you should do that in front of, you know, your friend, the scientist.
Should we infer that or imply that?
Is this based in some sort of technical language, or is this just a misunderstanding of what the two mean. I mean, like theory and hypothesis, obviously the misunderstanding is because one is the it's used differently. The words are used differently in the scientific arena. Mm-hmm. Are these words used differently in a different arena, or is this just a misunderstanding?
More so, this is more so philosophically, okay, is what we had seen.
Yeah.
But I mean, how many philosophers are walking around going, I take exception to this.
When you imply something, if I were to imply something, I would make a statement and there would be meaning behind it that I'm trying to get across to you, right? Mm-hmm. If I infer something, I'm the one drawing the meaning out of whatever I've read or heard.
Precisely.
You got it.
So which one do you, is usually the confused one? It doesn't seem like they're used interchangeably necessarily, but maybe one of them is used to mean either thing. What usually happens? How do people usually get this wrong?
Inferred when they mean implied.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I see the most often,
okay,
is inferred.
Okay. I was inferring that you're a jerk. Yeah, not you. Not yeah. you. Don't worry.
I beg your pardon.
Thank you, Fletcher.
Fletcher, you're saying it wrong.
Some theoretical person.
That's the most common one I have seen, and I think Ross,
okay,
you would agree with me.
Is yeah,
you see inferred when they mean implied. I also see implicit often misused. I think people use implicit just because it sounds fancy, as I'm prone to say, and I don't even think they know what they're, you know, why they've put it in there. Have you guys noticed that? I see implicit popping up where it's like,
describe what you mean.
Well, obviously, implicit is something that's implied. You say the implicit argument here, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But I think people put it in just because it's like multisyllabic and it sounds like they're philosophical. So they would say, speaking implicitly, I found this, blah, blah.
I
and it's
see.
Like, what are you even talking
oh,
about?
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. So it doesn't,
have you noticed
it
that?
It doesn't really even have a meaning there. Yeah.
No, it's just word.
Yeah.
Okay, moving along, this is Kathy's, I'm ready to scream. The word is moot, and Kathy, after having done extensive research on it, will sometimes go, well, that's a moot point, meaning that in this sense, not in that sense. And then you get this long explanation of moot, which occurs over and over again, and we're going to let Kat talk about moot right now.
I think I should just leave now. This is a personal, we all have our little like hills that we will like stand on, die on.
Uh-huh.
Moot and I like bonded years ago. And okay, I'm going to ask you, Fletcher, to use moot in a sentence, how you might use it, and explain what you think it technically means.
Okay.
Well, we always say it's,
Ross is grimacing.
Yeah,
I know.
we always say it's a moot point, meaning like it's no longer relevant.
Why is that wrong?
Well, so does it technically mean it's debatable?
Yes, exactly. So we use it. Now, this is a legal
okay. Here we go. Sorry. I'm getting nervous already.
Ross is going to get up and pour himself a brandy, I think. People use it, as you just said, to say, oh, yeah, the point's moot. It's like, you know, there's no reason to, we can't discuss because it's done.
Yeah.
And that's wrong because, I mean, you could mean it's pointless to discuss it because it's so debatable. We're just going to sit here and debate it back and forth and we'll never get to any conclusion. Mm. So what's the point? Mm-hmm. That's fine. But no one uses it. That's fine. You want to do that? Feel free. But they use it instead to mean, it's supposed to mean it's debatable, uncertain, open to argument. And it came from the moot, like it would like the place where you discussed hypothetical cases by law students and stuff. And now it's become the opposite of its meaning, and it drives me absolutely bonkers.
Which is why you constantly will go, that's a moot point. Well, actually, I mean that in this sense, not in that sense.
I do. And Ross has to sit there and go, oh. Okay, in a minute she'll be done.
I want to dig into this a little, just philosophically. When did you learn the technical definition, Kathy, and why did you decide this was something that was going to bother you?
That's a good question. Did I learn it, Ross, when we were writing You're Saying It Wrong?
Yes.
Yeah.
You did.
And as a nitpicker, which I am, which is why I like cleaning so much, I suddenly thought, oh my God, I've been saying moot all the time. I mean, it's, you know, yeah, the point is moot. It's moot point.
I do think you used moot a lot because you tend to be very skeptical in a good way. I'm not meaning it in a mean way at
Thank
all.
Thank you.
But you're very skeptical. So you will go like, well, that's sort of a moot point. You will do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you used it a lot. And then suddenly you were like, oh my God.
It's been wrong.
Yeah, I really think so.
I think you might be right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also like the word moot. I mean, mm-hmm. there's also that. Well, we've talked about this in the past when that you've seen people using, now they said that it's a mute point.
Right, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Which actually, though, at least it's a silent point. I can go with that a little better.
I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't. So I think Ross is right. I think I've used the term a lot, and then I learned I was using it incorrectly. And now I'm very, very rigorous about its use. Because I'll use it incorrectly. I just did that the other day. I said, well, actually, it's a moot point. And I said, well, no, it's technically not a moot point.
Yeah, I know. There we go. I know.
This is going to sound like I'm telling you you're wrong, Kathy, but to me, it feels a little bit like decimate, like learning that decimate actually means to reduce by a tenth and thinking, oh, I've been saying it wrong this whole time and then getting mad.
I would disagree.
Okay. Yeah. No, explain.
Because to me, people are using moot to mean it's undebatable. It's a fixed thing. And the real point of moot is that it's so debatable. So, I mean, like, you end up going, well, what's
is that
the,
still true?
There's no,
is that still true anywhere? Does anybody use moot that way anymore? Aside
I
from
do.
You, aside from you, yeah. But there are people who get mad about decimate, too,
Yeah, I know, actually. And I haven't, no, you're probably right. Well, legally, actually, moot point is still a legal issue.
It is.
I mean,
it's still used that way?
Yes, it is.
Well, I mean, that's something. That is something. That's not nothing.
That actually is, yeah.
So I feel a little better.
Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, I couldn't really bring that up without it sounding like I'm telling you you're wrong to feel this way. And I don't believe that. I'm just curious how you got here and why you want to continue on with that. This is not me throwing shade at you. It sounds.
No, I know that. Yeah. Speaking of which, we're doing a thing about, speaking of insults, we're doing a thing with throwing shade and stuff soon.
Oh,
so
good.
Stay tuned. No, I mean, it's actually kind of silly that I am like so wedded to this, but I am, and I shall continue to be so.
We all have these things. I was just curious about yours.
Yeah.
Next, what we'll do is inductive, deductive. I have nothing to say on the moot issue at all.
I am sure you have said it all, Ross, at some point or another with Kathy.
Well, the really horrible thing is Kathy has gotten me doing it. The other day, I actually was saying to someone, well, that's a moot point. Well, actually using it, and I thought, what am I doing?
I have done my job here on Earth.
Okay, here's one that's, that used to bother me is a while back, but inductive versus deductive.
Yeah, okay.
This one I remember in university, people are always going like, well, that's deductive or inductive. Mm-hmm. I was like, who cares? But whatever, let's go. But it's actually very vital in terms of reasoning.
It is, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. The problem is I can't remember exactly how to outline this. But in philosophy or reasoning, the distinction is really important. And I think it's basically reaching a conclusion from two different directions.
Precisely. So, good, Fletcher.
But how do I say this? Induction is like, I remember, speaking of dropping things, I think learning that, you know, rolling a ball off the table and watching it hit the ground and then assuming it'll happen that way the next time is inductive reasoning.
Let's do it more easily. There's top-down reasoning and bottom-up reasoning.
Mm-hmm. That's well put, Ross.
Deductive is top down.
Deductive is top down.
Inductive is bottom up. All people listening to this show are very intelligent. Okay?
Right.
This person listens to this show.
Therefore,
this person is intelligent.
Yes.
I mean, we're starting with, it doesn't necessarily mean it's true. We're starting with a basic statement, an assumption, an axiom that we know, that we've determined. All people listening to this are intelligent. And then from there, we deduce down this one person who's listening to the show.
So that's inductive.
That's deductive.
But inductive, you make the inference based on what you've seen.
Right, but in this case, we have we have basically the conclusion already. The conclusion is guaranteed true. People listening to this show are intelligent. Now, that may not be true, but we're doing deductive reasoning. And
yes, Russ, it is true, because we want them to give us good ratings. It's all true. You're also very good looking, and we like how you dress.
You smell nice, too.
Yes.
So all people is completely true. All people listening to the show
are very
smart.
Intelligent. Yes.
Okay.
That's deductive.
That's deductive. This person listening to the show, we're taking one person here, a random person goes, I listen to Fletcher, Ross, and Kathy. That person is a listener of the show. Therefore, that person is intelligent. Okay.
Whereas if I meet somebody and they say, I listen to Kathy, Ross, and Fletcher, and I'm very smart. And then we meet another person who says, I listen to Kathy, Ross, and Fletcher, and I'm very smart. Then eventually we decide everybody who listens to Kathy, Ross, and Fletcher is very smart.
Yes, inductive.
You're using
observations to build something that might be true. Okay? You're collecting, it's sort of scientific. You're collecting information. You're collecting observations. Let's talk about ducks, since we have an abrasive ducks. You see a brace of ducks and you go, all ducks I've seen are black. Okay? Therefore, all ducks are black. All ducks I've seen are black. Therefore, all ducks are black.
Mm-hmm.
That's inductive reasoning. It may not be true because there may be 500 ducks. What do we call a group of ducks?
But if we say all ducks are black,
right?
That bird over there is black.
No.
That bird over there is a duck, therefore it is black.
Yes.
Oh, God, this is bringing back logic, and this is why I quit philosophy.
That's deductive reasoning. Inductive is every duck I've seen is black, therefore all ducks are black. You don't know that.
Yeah.
It could be true.
So deductive is going from like the general to the specific thing. All ducks are black, therefore this next duck I see will be black. Whereas inductive is going from the specific ones.
Right.
I've seen a black duck and a black duck and a black duck and a black duck. Therefore, the next duck I see will be black because all ducks must be black.
Yeah.
So here's something, and I think a big part of why it's so confusing even to explain is because we talk about Sherlock Holmes a lot, right? And deduction. But like, he's not always using deduction. There's plenty of induction, right? And so I think it confuses people about what...
I think you're absolutely right.
I think you're right, Fletcher. Yeah. That's really annoying, though. Now I'm going to have to look at
the I'm a Sherlock Holmes nut. I mean, I have my little annotated Sherlock Holmes. I read all the little notes on the side because it's all like little weird things. And now I'm going to look at it with a jaundiced eye.
although I think he does use deductive reasoning. Like, all criminals share this characteristic. This person has this characteristic.
No, more often than not. But when I think about it, there are certainly ones where he's using inductive reasoning, where it's like, I have found this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Fletcher, you made a really good point. Wait a minute. 2 seconds. You guys keep talking. I'm going to see if Sherlock Holmes uses more inductive.
Oh, I think he's
sure somebody has gone through and counted every instance, haven't they?
This is why human beings are wonderful.
Oh, I found something.
Fletcher, you are brilliant. This is on YouTube, but it's unsolicited, but whatever.
So a guy, some person on YouTube. Okay, let's go.
So on Reddit, I'm sorry, here. Sherlock Holmes famously and incorrectly referred to this character's methods as deduction. In reality, Sherlock Holmes relies primarily on inductive reasoning. Good for kudos for Fletcher. Here's an article. Oh, wait a minute now. Here's another big article, The Dubious Logic of Sherlock Holmes.
Uh-huh.
Well, no, we don't. We do not throw shade at Sherlock.
All right. All right.
We do not. The point is moot.
Yeah, another big thing. He did not use deductive in a huge article here by some philosopher.
How funny.
Okay, we've learned something here.
So now let's move on.
Okay.
Fracture versus broken.
Oof.
This one I didn't know. I really didn't know this until...
I'm just going to guess. I have no idea. But is a fracture like a crack and a break is entirely separated?
That's exactly what I thought.
Okay.
And it's precisely wrong.
There's a fracture and broken bone are identical.
They're the same thing. Okay. Well, that, I mean, yeah. that's what I would have assumed just in general life. I did not actually think there was a distinction until just now when you brought up the two words. But we hear about like a hairline fracture, I think. You don't hear about a hairline break.
Yeah, I guess not.
You don't, do you?
Fletcher, you really are annoying with all these distinctions.
Know,
you're completely correct.
Yeah, they say that actually, usually medical professionals use the term fracture.
Okay.
Where like your basic hoi polloi will say break.
Yeah.
But both refer to crack, a shatter, or complete separation of the bone.
Okay. You're right, Kath.
But the average person, I thought a fracture was a partial break. Like it's like sort of like it's cracked or it's still like this, you know what I mean? Like there's a crack in it, but they haven't moved.
But haven't,
you know,
yeah,
we're going,
I'm going to throw something in here. A hairline fracture, according to this MD here, which, you know, we don't know. I mean, presumably he's right. A hairline fracture is simply an incomplete hair thin crack in the bone. It is not called a break in everyday term because the bone remains in one piece and is not fully split.
Okay.
That's really interesting.
So he's saying there is a difference.
Well, but not, hairline, but, hairline, right?
Hairline.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, when I fell and hit my pinky on a cutout on the street and I kept pulling my finger and it kept making a crunching and I thought, something's not right. Long story short, I ended up having to go. I had to get pins in and everything. And I loved the term. It was this wonderful Finnish doctor. And he said, no, it's not broken. I said, oh, great. He said, it's bestificated. It was a sack. It was like a sack of shattered crap in there.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
that's fascinating. Bestificated.
I loved that. He said that's the technical term he would use.
Here is an interesting statement. I have not really used this word very frequently, but terrestrial, this was a U.S. Geological Survey talking about the terrestrial ecosystems of the conterminous United States. Now, I'm going to ask you, I would have thought immediately when they said that, are states contiguous or conterminous?
Well, when we're kids, we always think we're cool because we learn to call the United States that do not include Alaska or Hawaii contiguous, right?
Right.
We always learn that. And then we think we're really cool.
Is that right or wrong?
Well, you're going to tell me it's wrong because otherwise you wouldn't be asking me this question.
You're right. And this is one of those hairline fracture distinctions that I don't think we need to get into.
Conterminous? Conterminous? C-O-N?
Yes.
Conterminous, yes. I guess, means that they all touch each other?
No, it does not mean they're touching.
Oh, is that contiguous?
That's contiguous.
Yes, contiguous is touching. Conterminous means enclosed within a common boundary. So if you're talking about the United States in that geological survey, they were right. The lower 48 are conterminous because not every state is touching. I mean, Washington State is not touching New York.
Yeah, but they do all.
But they're all.
But they are all. But they are all touching other states.
But they're not touching common states.
Yeah.
It's not a common. You're touching, in this case, you're touching, you want to basically be touching each one, and you're not.
Okay.
But this is one of those cases where it's like, none of us are ever going to say conterminous. I
right.
Mean, no.
We use contiguous to mean like kind of close, you know what I mean? And that's just dainty, I think.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I'm just curious. I'm going to do, because you technically what they're saying basically is contiguous is wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking up contiguous United States right now. I just want to see.
Well, I think unless you're a geologist, specifically one working for the government, I think that you're probably saying contiguous United States.
Yeah, most of us know what it means.
Yeah.
Or most of us know what we mean when we say it, I should say.
Yeah, I've never used the word conterminous.
Yeah.
Conterminous? Yeah. I can't even
interestingly, interestingly enough, Wikipedia, the opening article goes, the contiguous United States. I just looked up that title. The contiguous United States, also known as the U.S. mainland, officially referred to as the conterminous United States, consists of.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I think we're back to, like, that's just a theory.
Let's go. Well, I think, like, our friends, the geologists, can use conterminous all they want. Yeah. I won't object.
Well, that begs the question.
Oh.
Okay. This is my other moot.
Yes.
Do you really want me to do this, guys?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm actually mostly with you on this, other than I've kind of thrown up my hands about it.
Yeah, well, you can't win. It's like everybody thinks begs the question means it's a smarter way of saying raises the question.
Yeah.
We've discussed this in the past.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I know we have, because it's a pet peeve. And it's not. It just begs the question is a specific logic principle. It's a logic term that means you try to prove something based on a premise that also that hasn't been proven itself.
Yeah. Isn't it circular reasoning?
Yes.
Precisely. Because you're trying to prove something based on something that's unproven. So it becomes it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. It just doesn't pan out.
Yeah. And you know, you rarely see it used that way either. It's not like we're you and I, Kathy, are holding on to something precious because.
Well, I don't know. When we have dinner parties here, we have these logic discussions.
But it does. Yeah, it does also bother me. I mean, maybe this is my moot too, because I see people use it incorrectly. And yeah, it bugs me, even though nobody's ever using it correctly. There's no call for ever really using it correctly. We have other ways to say circular reasoning, like circular reasoning.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Which is a lot neater and more understandable.
And for some reason, though, I mean, raises the question is in effect a synonym for it.
Yeah.
But the problem with begs the question has, I think nowadays, has like an automatic kind of, well, that kind of begs the question there.
Yeah.
Whereas raises the question seems much. There's some slight, in the wrong usage of begs the question, there is a slight differential between raises the question and begs the question. Begs the question seems like you're being very skeptical. Raises the question has more of a like, you know, hey, what about this? You know, that sort of thing.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's funny that you say that. And I think the incorrect usage of begs the question is taking on its own aura, if you will, and you're right, and it's sort of like but I also do think, I'm sorry, this is where I get irritated with people, I do also think people like it because it makes them sound like this bang, you like lower your glasses and go, you know.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org. or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.